Everybody. So my name is Joe Campy, and I'm at the University of Washington School of Public Health, and I've been working with Dr. Matthew Kiefer and Leslie Horry in the Pacific Northwest Agricultural Safety and Health Center for about the last year, looking at a pilot study examining the health and safety issues of cedar block cutters on the Olympic Peninsula. I also have no relationships to disclose. So today I'm just going to talk briefly about the project, give a brief overview of the industry and the block cutting occupation. I'm going to try to go through these pretty quickly and then present the findings that we've had so far. So as of now, we've completed 13 key informant interviews. This is a qualitative study, and our project direction, we initially were hoping to have focus groups follow up these key informant interviews. Our project direction changed recently because over the about the past 4 months, ICE, Immigration, Customs and Enforcement, and Border Patrol have really amped up their presence in the town we're at. So we really feel it's too risky to have any group meetings at all in the town for fear of ICE raids. So we're changing the direction a little bit right now. We're going to do about 5 follow-up interviews, one-on-one interviews with the workers to continue our study. So this project, again, the main objective is to identify health and safety hazards of faced by cedar block cutters on the Olympic Peninsula. Cedar block cutters, so is anybody familiar with what a cedar shake and shingle is? The cedar. A lot of people. Okay, so you know, if you've seen a house with the shingles on the side, that's what we're dealing with here. And these workers are going out into the forest to get sort of the raw cedar product that gets then translated into the final product. So we're going to initially we had planned to have these focus groups to help us develop interventions and come up collaboratively with interventions with these workers. We're still hoping to do this, but it's going to take a little bit longer time frame. So that's another objective. And our third objective was to examine broader factors influencing these workplace health and safety issues, both social, economic, and cultural. So first and foremost, we're using a community-based participatory research framework. It's really important to note that the block cutters came to Panache first, asked for our technical assistance in this issue. And we've involved community members in many stages of our project. Including developing the interview instrument and implementing, we're going to involve them in implementing interventions. We've also had difficulties around this issue, mostly because of time. The workers don't have a lot of time to offer the project, so they haven't been involved in the data analysis, for instance, or writing up the findings. We're hoping to change that. We're also using a social ecological framework in which human behavior is sort of examined in a broad social context. And again, we did the 13 key informant interviews, and we ended with the number 13 because we really reached saturation with this number, and it's a pretty big proportion of the workers out there. There's only about 100 workers in the area we're working in, so 13 out of 100 is a pretty good number. We're also using a grounded theory approach to our contents analysis. So here's a map of the where cedar is grown, where it grows in the North America. And the circle there, the red circle, is the Olympic Peninsula. So that's where our research is focused, in Washington. Now the cedar shake and shingle industry is the industry that block cutters work within. It's been declining pretty steadily over the last several decades. Since 1985, for instance, there was 100 cedar mills in western Clallam County, which is the county we're working in, in 1985, and now there's only about 10. So it's really declined a lot, but it's still functioning relatively well, and it's a very active industry, as you can tell by the jobs and the profits from the industry. So at the same time of this decline, there's been a rapid increase in the percent population of Latinos in the area. If you can see the western Washington, which is where all these towns are located, Has had about an average of 270% increase in the Latino population, as compared to about 106% in the rest of the state. So this increase has really created a ready-made population to fill these low-paying, difficult jobs of the declining cedar shake industry. So about 20 years ago, the industry was maybe about half and half Mexican immigrant and white, and now it's almost exclusively Latino Mexican immigrant. So here's a diagram of the sort of the power players in the industry. I'm not going to go into too much detail with this, but know that it's here, and we've really mapped out how this industry works and where the block cutters, which are on the top left corner of this diagram, fit into the whole scheme. Basically, the administrators and the cedar mill owners are the real center of the industry. They're the power players and really navigate what cedar is cut, where and when, and the block cutters sort of serve as the people who go out and do the hard work without much power. So basically, the administrators will set up the block cutters with the cedar mill owners. The block cutters will then go to the land, cut the blocks. They'll be transported back to the mills where they'll be turned into cedar shakes and shingles. So I'm going to just now briefly present a series of pictures that'll help describe what this job is. Here's an example of sort of the terrain that these workers work in and some of the tools. Does anybody know what this tool that the worker is carrying right here is called? A PV, yeah. So it's a PV. It's a basically a log roller. They use it to move big pieces of wood. They also use really big, about 3 foot bar long chainsaws to cut the cedar blocks. They use axes, wedges, and various other tools. The conditions they work in is a fairly isolated. They work in fairly isolated work conditions, far away from towns. In the woods, basically. So this is in Vancouver, or in British Columbia, Canada, but very similar to what the Olympic Peninsula in Washington looks like. And behind this worker is a cedar stump, an old cedar stump that has been clear cut ages ago, and they're going back in to salvage the wood from the cedar stumps. So essentially what these workers do is they'll go into the forest, they'll carry all their tools from their car, maybe take 2 or 3 trips from their car to carry all their tools to the work site, sometimes up to a mile of a walk through the woods. They'll then start cutting the block in the serviceable pieces of the block, clear away debris, and cut sections of the wood into 16, 18, or 24 inches long sort of blocks. And then they'll trim them with an axe to cut the bark off and other non-serviceable parts of the wood. And then they'll move to the next stump in the area. After that, they'll stack all the blocks that they've cut into these ropes that act as slings. The slings are what they connect the blocks to the helicopter with. And the helicopter moves. They use a helicopter to transport the stacks of blocks to the nearest forest road. So each block weighs roughly 30 to 50 pounds. So they're doing a lot of heavy lifting to create these stacks. And here's a good picture of just how big the finished stack is. And you'll have an area of where they're working, which has dozens of these finished stacks all sort of lined up next to each other. Oftentimes, the forest is a lot more dense than this diagram shows, but it's a pretty good picture of what a general work site looks like. So then again, there's a helicopter that will transport all of these stacks to the nearest forest road so they can be transported by truck to the nearest mill. A worker will be below to catch the hook of the helicopter. They'll connect it to the stacks. The helicopter will lift it up and fly it over, and then a worker will be below to receive the stack and situate it by the trucks. Then the block cutters themselves then load all of the finished blocks into boxes on the trucks. The trucks transport them to the mills, and the mills then turn them into cedar shakes or shingles. And the finished product looks kind of like that. So that's basically the Cedar Blackhead in a nutshell. Now I'm going to go into the findings that we found and really look at the dangers of the job. So this worker said, cedar is heavier than gold, but worth a lot less, right? So we saw, I only have about 5 minutes, so I'm going to kind of go through these pretty quick. We saw, we interviewed 9 Mexican-born block cutters, 3 U.S.-born Anglo block cutters, and 1 community worker. The Mexican-born block cutters were all male. They were relatively poor. Most of the median income fell below the federal poverty line. They were middle-aged, pretty low educated, just finishing primary school, and very experienced group of men. All of them, majority of them, having worked more than 11 years in block cutting. As comparison, the Anglos were poorer. They were younger and more highly educated. It's important to note that these workers do not rely on the block cutting occupation for their full wage. They sort of do piecemeal and live off the land out there and do other things. And then the community worker has worked with these workers for several years and lived out in the area. So as we would expect, block cutters encounter some typical risks that general forestry occupations encounter on their jobs, such as slips, strips, and falls, acute trauma from their tools, mostly cuts from the chainsaw, chronic musculoskeletal injuries due to repetitive motion, heavy lifting. They also have varied PPE. They have exposure to vibration and noise, mostly from the chainsaw as well. Each of these were really major themes in our interviews, but they're definitely at sort of the front and center of these workers' lives. But I'm not going to focus on them today because they are so typical and we don't have a lot of time. So I'm going to instead focus on some of the unique risks that this population faced. The most alarming risk is the helicopter transport, and probably the most dangerous risk. It was definitely a very major theme in the interviews. Almost all of the workers identified this as a really big danger of their job. So this worker said, "For me, the most dangerous part of the job is flying the blocks. You have to move fast. Sometimes you move into the brush and you can't run fast because of the brush. It's dangerous." So some more specific themes within this helicopter transport. There was a real communication barrier identified by some of the workers, a few of them. The helicopter gives us a radio. The workers who can speak English talking to the radio, we use clicks to let them know to go. So if any of you have ever used a two-way radio, you know how easy it is to click on accident. And the fact that you have to seek out the workers who speak English just to communicate with the pilots is pretty shocking. Another theme that we saw was workers can get tangled into the sling, the sleigh line, that you saw the rope. It seems fairly frequent. This worker said that this actually happened while we were conducting our interviews out there. This man got caught in the sling line while they were flying blocks. He was lifted off the ground and broke his leg pretty much and snapped it in half. And then another worker identified that 2 years ago, a worker he saw broke his hand by getting caught in the sling. So here's some pictures of exactly why this is so precarious. This worker is holding the sling in the correct manner of how you should stack the blocks. If the helicopter pulls, the sling will basically go to the top of the stack of blocks and pull it out. In this instance, if the helicopter pulls the sling, it's going to shift the entire stack of blocks and cause some dangers. So these workers really have to know what they're doing when they're stacking the blocks and how to situate them in the slings. There's also been 2 known deaths due to blocks falling out of the slings once they've hit forest debris, the forest canopy and things like that. A few years back, a man died when a block that was flying fell and hit him in the head. This picture is from British Columbia, where this actually did happen about 10 years ago. And you can really see how if a worker doesn't know how to move out of the flight path and it hits the canopy, then the blocks can fall. So another unique risk that these workers face is that they work in isolation far from towns and often far from clinics. This worker is describing one time that his friend cut his leg pretty bad with a chainsaw, and he was about 15 miles from the clinic, and was very scared. He had to drive him to the clinic, and his brothers went looking for him in the woods because they didn't know where he went. The workers also, a few of the workers really stressed the fact that the white population in the area and the Mexican immigrant population were very divided. This white block cutter said that Mexicans are treated like a separate entity. It's like they are their own community, they are very separate, not that much interaction. And one worker in particular stressed the fact that this division can lead to health and safety concerns on the job. In general, Americans think they have more rights than Mexicans, but they don't. This leads to the helicopter pilots and truck drivers not caring what happens to Mexicans, and so accidents happen because they are careless. Another theme we saw was a really severe lack of job and safety training. Almost all the training on the job and the safety training, there's pretty much no safety training, and all the jobs training is pretty informal. So people don't ask questions and get a lot of experience before cutting blocks because they just don't care. They just go out into the woods and kind of see what other people are doing and start working. Two workers had received some formal safety training about 10 years ago after the death of the cedar block falling from the helicopter that the helicopter companies conducted. And it really shows how the safety training and the safety climate in general is reactionary in this environment, only sort of happening after injuries occur. And the fact that it was the last one was 10 years ago really shows that there hasn't been much lately. We've also seen barriers to PPE, personal protective equipment. We'd expect a lot of the workers, there was a big theme that the workers had discomfort with the PPE, or it slowed down their work so they didn't want to use it, but unexpectedly, some of the workers said they had to choose between buying PPE and feeding their families because they had such low pay. So that was pretty unexpected finding for the PPE. Lastly, we identified that tree falls and the commuting to and from work that these workers do is a pretty big risk that they face. We weren't really expecting tree falls to be a risk because they're not felling trees, actually, but snags and high winds during certain seasons dislodge trees. So this worker shows that. So I'm just going to read four more quotes here, and then I'll be done. And so given the plethora of these risks, it's not surprising that that a majority of these block cutters identified major injuries that they had suffered while they were working. To get a feel of some of these injuries, I'm just going to read these four quotes. This worker said he's fractured fingers. One time I fell and hit my chest and nothing else. I didn't work for about 8 days. I couldn't go to the doctor. Another one, I was walking carrying a chainsaw. This is an example of where you're just walking in the woods with your tools. He fell and fractured a few ribs while walking. I had surgery on my finger after a branch with thorns on it hit my hand while I was walking in the forest on the job. A part of the branch went deep into my finger. And a while ago, a trunk fell from really high and hit me. I think that's why my waist hurts so much. So in conclusion, we can pretty safely say that workers face these known risks, the typical risks of forestry occupations, but they potentially face them at a higher rate, mostly because they're making more cuts than, say, loggers with chainsaws. They're making upwards to 250, 300 cuts a day in these stumps, and loggers have a lot less cuts. They also face unique and previously unknown risks that I detailed. The social environment definitely impacts their workplace health and safety, such as the divided community and the isolation that they face. So our limitations, first, our data set really lacks the voice of inexperienced workers and more recent Mexican immigrants. This might have skewed our data towards sort of historical risks that have been associated, that have been corrected, but it's most likely that the more recent immigrants actually face more risks than the more experienced workers. It's also important to note that all of our interviews were conducted in Spanish by non-native Spanish speakers, it was myself and my coworker Leslie, although we're both fluent in Spanish, obviously there would be some language and cultural barriers there, and some of the intricacies might have been lost. And lastly, we had a little bit of trouble getting workers to participate, and again, that's mainly because they lacked sort of time to get involved in this project because they're working so much, but it's also around the sort of difficulties with getting building trust with these workers since they are so marginalized. So our next steps, we had planned on conducting a few health and safety workshops. We conducted one of them last May, and we had an amazing amount of workers show up. We had 70 workers come, and we talked about primary first aid issues in the woods, and we also did immigrant rights, an immigrant rights workshop. Because of the ICE climate again, the immigration climate, we're not going to do any more workshops at this moment. We might do them in the future. We are sort of taking the opportunity now, because we have this data pre the immigration crackdown. We're going to go back to some select workers and try to assess the risks, the direct risks associated with the immigration climate. For instance, they have increased pressure to make money because they can't work as often because they have to stay at home and because they're hiding in the woods. That's it.